Good. So I'd like to introduce Dr. Boyle. She is with Albert Einstein Academy, and I asked her if she can give like a brief summary of what that is. It's a charter school here in town, and so she is the special ed director. She's also a counselor, and we're so excited that she's here to talk to us about setting appropriate limits.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Thanks for letting me have the opportunity to come and speak with you today. I'll give you a little background about myself and then about the school I work at and kind of my journey. First, I am a parent of a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old. I live on the east side in Orange, so this is quite the haul for me. I work on this side of town. And actually, my first job was in the Berea City Schools in 1988, long time ago. I've been doing this for 30 years. So I started there. I had my bachelor's degree in special ed, so I was a learning disabilities tutor over there. I was at Ford and then at Big Creek. And then I got a full-time job at South Euclid Lyndhurst Schools, where I spent 22 years as a special educator. I worked in a unit that had students identified as having learning disabilities, as having emotional disturbance. I've worked with kids who have autism. I've worked with kids who, at the time, it was called developmentally handicapped. Now it's intellectual disability. ID is the new term for that. I was also a school counselor there as well. I worked in K-8. I never did make it to the high school, so this is actually better for me because I've never worked in a high school until now when I'm with Albert Einstein Academy, but I'm not giving direct service there. I'm the director of special ed. I grew up in a house where my brother was identified as having a learning disability. We grew up in Shaker. At the time, way back, late 70s, early 80s, they were not very good about servicing their special needs kids. I'm not sure how much farther they've come. I can't speak to that. I don't live there anymore. But I had a brother who was identified as learning disability, and I have a sister who has Williams syndrome and who also would be identified as having an intellectual disability. She now currently lives in a group home in Pepper Pike, right down the street from me, which is phenomenal. But my mother actually pulled both of them out of the Shaker schools. If you think about it, she was one of those parents, which now I know that because, you know, I lived with it, and she was right to be one of those parents because they were not doing what they needed to do for her children. And so when those parents come in, and the school that I work at, they've often had some issues with their home district. So I understand where everyone is coming from because I kind of lived it. And so my sister actually ended up going to Mayfield City Schools, which at the time had one of the best special education programs, and I still think it does. For a long time, part of the CVAC was there. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's the east side version of, maybe it's Polaris here, maybe. Do you know, Christine? I don't know. Anyone? But it's the Cuyahoga East Vocational Educational Consortium, which took a bunch of school districts, and they went there for work study. You had to have an IEP. She's been at Wendy's at 271 in Chagrin, if you're ever on the east side. She works there 3 days a week, 11:30 to 2:30. She just recently got a 25-year gift basket, which was a fruit basket. She had no idea what to do with it. She brought it home. She showed the house parents, and then, like she's supposed to do with everything else that she brings into the house, she put it in her closet, this fruit basket. Then 2 weeks later, the house mothers are like, what in the world? It stinks in here. So thinking about, like, just things that you think kids know, or she's an adult now. She's almost 50. And she just didn't know what to do with this fruit basket, stuffed it in her closet, like everything else she gets. So, but she's been there a really long time, and so I'm now, both of my parents are deceased, and I'm now her guardian. So I don't know if any of you have old enough kids. I think this is a younger crowd, but that in and of itself is quite the journey once you're the guardian of someone who has special needs. So I went to school at Miami of Ohio, got my bachelor's in science in special education, did the South Euclid Berea thing for a long time. Somewhere in there, I realized that the kids who were successful in school, it wasn't so much how, I guess, disabled they were or how much of a struggle they had with reading. It had a lot to do with their social, emotional, like, and familial support that they had that kind of helped decide whether or not they were going to be successful in school. So I went back to get my school counseling degree at John Carroll. I got that. I didn't go into school counseling for a long time. I loved what I was doing in the special ed units. So I continued with that. I eventually did transition into school counseling. But then I was like, this is this is not everything. It's not just that. It's also the family. So then I decided, okay. And then I went to the University of Akron and got my PhD in marriage and family therapy. And I kind of melded my two worlds together when I did my dissertation. And I did my dissertation on parents of children with special needs who are transitioning into adulthood, because that seemed to be a very stressful time for parents. You're leaving the cocoon of IEPs and having an IEP teacher and having the schools pretty much get back to you pretty quick to transitioning into the world of social services and special educator or social workers who don't necessarily call you back like in a timely fashion. And so that was a big, this is, you know, when I did this, this was before the transition IEPs that came out. And it turned out that their stress adaptation and coping was second only to the initial diagnoses, because all of their friends' kids are going to prom, are getting their driver's license, are going off to college, or getting a job, whereas once they leave the realm of public schools, they're done at 22 if they end up staying, and then what? And so that was very stressful. Then they start thinking of who's going to take care of them, where can they live, finding in a suitable group home. So that special ed has been my passion all of these years. Somewhere in this journey, I decided I wanted to go teach at the college level. So there was a job at Cleveland State, and I thought, I'm going to apply for this. It was in the counseling department. I called up my old professors at Akron, and I said, hey, can you write me a recommendation for Cleveland State? And they said no, and I'm like, whoa, like, why are you telling me no? And they're like, because we have a job here and we want you to come work here. So I ended up going to the University of Akron. I spent 12 years there. I was in their counseling department. I taught in the marriage and family, in the counseling. Those are both my letters up there. Academia loves a lot of letters, so I just threw them all up there. So I'm an individual marriage and family therapist. I have an independent license and a supervisor license. I'm a PCCS, which is a clinical counselor, which a lot of you may go see a PCCS with a supervisor. I'm also a professional school counselor. So Akron, I don't know if you've heard all the trials and tribulations of Akron. I was there teaching. I became the director of one of their counseling clinics for 5 years. I did that, so all of the counseling students had to come through. We saw clients from the community, from the Akron community that didn't have Medicaid and didn't have insurance, so they fell through the cracks. We were 0 to 25 on a sliding scale, but no one was denied service due to inability to pay. So we saw a lot of clients that wouldn't be able to get mental health services elsewhere, and our students were able to get the hours they needed to move towards independent licensure. So I did that for a long time, and long story short, they've had a lot of financial issues, a lot of turnover, and I thought, I'm done with higher ed. You guys are all crazy up there. So I wanted to come back to my K-12 roots. I've known Bruce, who is he was supposed to be here, but that's, I'll get to that in a sec. And I called him up, and I'm like, hey, I think I'm leaving Akron. I need a job. And he's like, come work for me. This is what we're doing. So for this was my first year at Albert Einstein Academies. After being in the public schools for as long as I was, I never thought I'd be working for a community charter school. I'm like, interesting. And so I came. I talked to him. I loved what he was doing. We have a campus in Westlake, which has been open for 5 years. It's grades 4 through 12. We just opened a Strongsville campus in the old Drake Elementary this year, and that's K-8. And then we're going to be opening, that's what he's doing today. We're finalizing a lease in Lakewood, where the old University of Akron building was. I don't know. This is pretty south of Lakewood, so I don't know who knows Lakewood, but it's, I think, is it Warren and Detroit? Do they cross, or are they parallel? I get confused. So that's what we're opening. It is going to be an LGBTQ-affirming school, but open to anybody. So, and we have gotten such positive feedback from that. That's going to be a high school only, 9 to 12. The way a community school works, I don't know if you guys know the ins and outs of that, but any child gets $6,000 that follows them if they go to a public school. Property taxes where you live stay with their home district. So we run a school on $6,000 foundation dollars from the state. If your child is identified as having any sort of special education services, we get additional dollars for that, just like the homeschool would get additional dollars for that as well. That follows the child. Albert Einstein Academies has probably about a 40% special education population. So we service a lot of students that have special needs. We've kind of found our niche there. Word of mouth has spread. Our Strongsville started, for example, we had four third graders when we first started. We're now up to 12. And pretty much every child that comes in has an IEP. So my job was a lot easier at the beginning of the year, and it's getting busier and busier towards the end of the year. So that's where I am now. So setting appropriate limits. Most of this presentation is going to focus on love and logic. Does anyone know love and logic? I know you do. You do. Okay. So that's kind of what I've ascribed to. I don't know when I stumbled across this, probably in one of my graduate degree classes. But I've been using it with my kids since they were wee little. I use it in teaching. There's a teaching with love and logic. It was required reading in all of my counseling courses, so my counselors had to use it if they ever had parents coming in. So most of this is going to be doing that. I think that they do a really nice job of, I'm training my school right now, and it is just changing how you say things to the kids and giving the ownership back to the kids. So what else was I supposed to? Oh, so how many have kids that are little guys, like before school? So a couple of toddlers running around. What about like early elementary? Okay, so that's most of it. And then any junior high or high school? Probably not. Okay, so you have some, but also, okay. All right, so most of this will be geared. I think I have a couple that may be high school limits, but they'll be doing that. So if you just want to go ahead. So she's running the screen for me, so I'm a little. Okay, so why limits are important. Teaches kids self-discipline. They keep them safe, keeps them healthy, helps them cope with uncomfortable feelings such as being told no. Like, how do you deal with that? And shows kids that you care. So the self-discipline. When you say it's time to turn off your video game and do your homework, you're teaching self-discipline. I don't know how many of your kids are on Fortnite. Oh, my Lord, I'm about to lose it with my son. Lose it. He has no screen time now during the week because his grades tanked when that game came out. Seriously, he's in eighth grade. I thought he had the self-discipline to, like, you know, he doesn't. He does not. And he's, like, gets good grades, and he's a pretty good kid. And I'm like, no more during the week. You're done. So you have to be responsible. It's all about managing their responsibilities, homework, chores, taking care of their bodies. I always say, as the kids get older, with freedom comes responsibility. So the more freedoms you get, the more responsibilities you have, and that's just kind of how it goes back and forth. And then also, they have to impose limits on themselves. So how do you do that? How do you get them to do that? Because at certain ages, the video game is here. I'm getting immediate gratification every time I push that button. I'm going to stay here. This is way more fun than going upstairs and mowing the lawn. And then telling an older child she can watch TV as soon as she gets all of her homework done. So, and we'll talk about how to say those things, but it's always if then. If you want to go ahead. Keeping them safe, clearly. So there's a big challenge always. You want your kids to grow up to make choices on their own, but sometimes you have to set limits. I can tell you, just being from a marriage and family therapist, households that have no hierarchy and no boundaries within the household, they're the ones coming into counseling. They're the ones that, you know, sometimes the limit is there, sometimes it's not, sometimes the kids are in control, sometimes they're not. And so having that, you're the parent, and you have to make the hard decisions to say no. And I know how that's easier said than done, because especially if you're a single parent or you've been at work all day, it's just so much easier not to pick that fight, to shut that video game off, because you're tired and you're like, oh, they're quiet, they're not bugging me, I can do what I need to do. But it also, when you're giving them this responsibility, you're telling them, okay, I want you to be safe. I love you. These are the things that need to happen so that can happen. They don't always see it that way. They just hear you saying that you can't do certain things. And we'll talk about management contracts. I'm very hesitant with those a lot of times because I think, you know, it takes 6 to 8 weeks for a behavior to change, and many people are not willing to, like, follow through with that. That's at school and at home, and it usually gets worse before it gets better. And so a lot of times when I see people in counseling, they've bailed on it, and I think you really need to have, you know, just one or two things. We'll touch upon that later, that you're focusing on, and everything else you just got to let go. You just got to focus on the one or two things that drive you up the wall. Keeping them healthy. So that's, again, with freedom comes responsibility. I mean, if I want to, I can eat pizza every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but that's not going to help my health. So with that, I have to have some sort of limits. I let kids have cookies who have eaten a healthy choice first. So making sure that, you know, they're not eating, you know, the entire thing. I was at a wedding once, and there was a 2-year-old, and in his bottle was Diet Coke. And I just about lost it. I'm like, I can't be near this parent anymore. Like, and this was a friend of a friend, and I just thought, who does that? I mean, and why are they still here at a wedding? I mean, I understand that sometimes, you know, it's a family wedding and whatever, but it's like, you know, and this kid was just melting down. I thought it's either Diet Coke or overtired, but sometimes you just can't give them what they want. That's just certainly not a healthy start to anything. They have new teeth coming in, the whole thing. But setting limits of screen time, exercise, hygiene, and other health practices, you need to start that young. I kind of blew it when I with my kids. My mom lived with me for a long time. Both my parents died of terminal illnesses, but it was time for her to move in. And it was a win-win. She got to spend time with her grandkids, and I'm a working mom. So, you know, it was nice to have, like, kind of a built-in babysitter. And At the time, I was working on Saturdays seeing clients, and I don't know what my husband was doing. He should have been around. But anyways, I don't know where he was. But my mom would call me up or tell me, yeah, they had Cheetos and Orange Pop for breakfast. I'm like, you're killing me, woman. But it's a fight I really couldn't pick because she's doing me a solid. So I kind of lost that battle a little bit. And maybe I should have had a little more limits with my mom. But, you know, I knew she was dying. She wants to spend time with her kids. It was a big quandary. So now...
probably a hero. Are you
kidding? Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, so they would come in and they're like, Mom's being so mean to me. She's like, come in here, tell me all about it. She had a door that she could close if she didn't want, you know, she had her own little suite that she could close. And now my son has, like, I think it's part connection with her. He took over her little, like, TV room, and he's got all his stuff in there, and I think it's this little way of, you know. But, yeah, oh, yeah, she was a hero. Pasta, who cares? 7 o'clock in the morning, sure, I'll make you some pasta, whatever. Okay, so yeah, that I kind of lost that battle. Got to pick them. Okay, so the uncomfortable feelings. How do you deal with it when you don't get your way? No one likes not getting their way. Everyone wants to do whatever they want whenever they want. So this helps them. And, you know, in the giving in piece, that's the hardest part, and I'm with you there. So every time you set a limit, it's an opportunity for him or her to practice emotions. So frustration, anger, boredom, whatever it is. You know, they want to do those video games all day long, and, you know, they're like, it's boring when I'm not, you know, outside is boring, inside is boring, everything's boring. I'm like, you know, when doing the whole thing, like I used to walk up 5 miles in a blizzard to school. You know, we were outside playing. We have woods in our backyard. I would have been out there all day doing whatever, and my son's like, whatever, he don't care. So... but it's all about teaching kids you want them to become responsible, contributing members of society, and that starts at a young age. Even a 2-year-old can have a limit. It's going to look much different than a 12-year-old. Okay. Nope. Showing kids you care. So, again, this is a for an older kid, I care about you, and that's why I'm giving you a curfew. Annoy your child, but nothing good is happening after 1 a.m. in the morning. There's just nothing good's happening out there. So people on the road generally are not safe at 1 a.m. So having that and showing them that you care, having them do well in school, all of those things, it is because we care. It's not because we're out to get them. They see it that way, but it is because we are showing that we love them. So a lot of it is how, you know, they'll look at you, and this happens in school all the time. Like, a kid will do something, and they'll turn around and see, is she still looking at me? We had a child in the office was having a complete meltdown. The principal was actually on the phone with the parent, and the parent's like, do you need to go? Because he's like, listen to me, it's not fair. And then he would stop and peek over and see if she was still listening. She took the phone call, and the parent's like, do you need to go? And she's like, no. He's just having a tantrum, and I'm going to ignore it. He laid on the floor and then started blowing his nose all over the floor. And again, she ignored it. People were walking into the office right over him to see if we were going to get a reaction out of him. But I think a lot of it is, what can we do? Those limit testers are always going to see how far can I push before she's going to come and talk to me. So, and the sibling rivalry, we'll touch a bit on this later. I mean, they do things, and it goes well into adulthood. You would not believe the counseling that I've done with siblings. And it's just like, as soon as they come back to their family of origin, it's just like the same things. So they're just seeing, you know, is she going to, you know, and so many kids will kind of peek at you, like, are they looking? Like, are they watching what I'm doing? And so using your skill of ignoring or whatever limit you set, well, I'm sorry you made that choice. I'm a broken record with that. I'm sorry you made the choice to do whatever it is that they decided to do. So they're going to see, you know, what you're going to do with that. We'll come back to that. There'll be things to say for that. Okay. Where did care? All right. So act, don't yak. So this is my biggest mantra pretty much everywhere I go. You think about the Charlie Brown mom, womp, 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 Carl, womp, 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 you know, and that's all they hear is like their name and they hear nothing else. So you want to set your limit, you want to tell them what the consequence is, and then you're done. They can argue with you. Kids love to argue and try and negotiate, but what if I do that? What if, I'm sorry you made the choice to not put your game away, now you don't get any screen time after dinner. I mean, that's the end of it. You're done. So, and I say the same thing with teachers, too. Like, they're just trying to rationalize with these kids, and I'm like, no, this was a limit. You need to enforce it. You're done. They knew the consequences ahead of time, and then you go back, I'm sorry you made that choice. And I say that all the time because that's putting it back on them. Then they can't be like, I'm failing your class because you're doing whatever. I can't go play with Johnny because you're being mean. I'm sorry you made the choice not to put your toys away when I told you to. That's the end of it. So that's what you need to say over and over again. Okay, so Love and Logic, I have all these books up here, plus a Tough Kid book, which is more for school, but they have some really cool like behavior chart stuff in there, which I thought you could do at home. It's really kind of fun. So so there's two rules to Love and Logic. These guys came up with this approach, I don't know how many years, I don't know when the first book was, a long time ago. I think this is the first book I got. That's the updated version, if I can find it. Oh my goodness, this has my home phone, so 90. They've updated. They have plenty of books, and they got more books. They're making money hand over fist. But there's so many different parenting books out there and so many parenting, I guess, approaches. There's Winning the Whining War. I can't think of anything else. But there's several. And this is the one that just resonated with me. So this is the one I've used. I found a lot of success with it, both at home in my counseling practice and at school. So I've been able to translate it anywhere. It works with kids who have IEPs, behavior issues, kids who have ADHD. Depending on the child, a lot of kids who have autism, it works with them because it's very concrete, and that's what's good. And you don't use sarcasm, which can be hard for me because I use sarcasm a lot, and I've learned my lesson. So there's so that you want to set it like that, not like that. You will. You want to be that guy over there. So, okay.
Dr. Yeah. I just want to clarify, but it also works with children who don't have ADHD.
Oh, yeah, no, just right. My kids do not have any identified issues, and it works with them sometimes. I'll share a story with my son, which was really funny. We have a whole room called the timeout room at my house, which that seems really bad, but it's not as bad as it is. When a child causes a problem, the adult hands it back in a loving way. So again, you're taking the onus off of you, and you're putting the responsibility back on the child. Obviously, it has to be developmentally appropriate. So the adult holds the child accountable for solving his or her problems in a way that does not make problems for others. Children are offered choices with limits. That's the big thing in my house, choices. You use enforceable statements, delayed extended consequences, and it's locked in before the consequences are delivered. So this is, the delayed part is big because when we're screaming at them, and, you know, that makes us feel really good because you can't believe they did this if you've told them no 1,000 times. You're like, this is the rule that you broke. I'm really sorry that you made that choice. We'll talk about your consequences later. And you kind of delay them and let them stew because that's a big thing because in the moment sometimes you say things like, you're grounded for 3 weeks. It's like, whoa, why did I do that to myself? Like, that was a mistake. Because now they're going to be, but, and 3 weeks, well, that's an aside. I didn't put that in here, actually. It's T-spot. I don't know if anyone used the T-spot before. Take everything away for a short period of time. Everything. Short period of time, 2-3 days. That's sometimes more effective than grounding them for weeks at a time. T-spot. Take everything away, T, short period of time. But that's, and that keeps you, if you're doing the delayed consequence, and I'm going to go through each one of these. That's the presentation. That the delayed consequences helps you. And you can also then, if you have a partner, you can speak to your partner and be like, this is what happened. This was kind of a big deal. How should we handle it? And it also lets the child know, what's happening? And between now and then, they can do whatever they want, but the consequences will be coming, and you just, you know, they have to stew about it and think about, like, what are they going to cook up in there? So it makes them also kind of reflect back on what they did, and sometimes you can even give them choices for the consequences later. Okay. Every limit we set yet fail to enforce erodes our relationship with our children, and every limit set yet not enforced reduces credibility in the eyes of our kids. And every one of us has done this. I mean, every one of us, there's just no way. There's things that you say, and then something comes up, and you can't enforce it. And I'm guilty of it. I think everyone's guilty of it. It's hard to be consistent every day. I mean, you come home for work, you're tired, and you're like, ugh. I know he's supposed to get off at 6, but man, I just need a little nap on the couch. So, but that's, you know, that's the way it is. Now, it's not that you can't get it back, but every time that we set one and then don't follow through, it's like, yeah, you know, maybe he or she won't remember in the morning. Next one. Okay. So, keep your limits simple and general. So, their big mantra, and I don't use this one, but this is theirs, is I allow blank as long as it doesn't cause a problem. That's a general one. I allow you to play with the lightsabers as long as it doesn't cause a problem. The second a lamp goes down or, you know, somebody gets hurt, because that's generic, right? You could put anything in there as long as it doesn't cause a problem. Now, causing a problem, that's the thing you need to define. That's what I don't like about this statement, but I put it up there because that's one of their things. I would have said, I would have to add a few more, but, and then you have to define problem, because...
No one's hurt and nothing is...
Right, exactly. So you have to, like, define that. And then what if the lamp just tips over but it's not broken? So is that, you know, so there you go. Like, there's always a loophole. My son is great. That's why this does not work with my son. He is one of the smartest kids I know, and if he used his smarts for good instead of evil... Hey, he is constantly challenging me, and I'm like, oh, you're right, I didn't say it that way. And I'm like, curses. So he's the reason why we have a whole room, the timeout room. So that's, but it is. It's, you need to keep them simple in general. You do. But again, my son would be like, well, it wasn't a problem to me. Like, you know, so maybe it's more of a problem for me. Would I define a problem, whatever my problem is. But they have to be enforceable, and that's the thing. You can't really enforce that. So that's my issue with that rule. Rule two. All right, this is the big one. Describe what you will do, not what the child is supposed to do. When we tell someone what they must or must do, we are trying to control something we can't. Right? And when we describe what we will do or allow, we're remaining unfocused on what we control. I give allowance to those who finish their chores. Instead of, you're not getting your allowance until you do your chores. So it's more positive. I keep the toys I pick up. That was a big one in my house. I did that. You can keep the ones you pick up. I mean, I had full garbage bags full of stuff. And I'd be like, where's this? Where's that? I'm like, I don't know. And then they had to earn it back because I was just like, I'm not doing this. Especially with my daughter who was 3. She only had a few out, but I had an infant son. And I'm like, I was always fearful I'm going to be walking down the stairs, step on something, and he was going to fall straight head first and have like some major trauma. Like that was my big fear. So I was always cleaning stuff up right before. And then breakfast is served until 7:30. Get all you need to hold till lunch. That's a natural consequence. You don't eat breakfast. Sorry. You know, that train is gone. And then my car's leaving at 8 a.m. or the bus is whatever. So again, you can control that. So things that you can control. And the big thing about this that I like about this approach is that there's a lot of natural consequences. I think one of them I give is, like, you can put your coat on now or you can put it on when you're outside. If it's minus 20, I'm not going to get in a fight with them. You're going to get frostbite, whatever, unless they're really stubborn. They're going to put that coat on at some point. Although I'll tell you, we just had a kid out at Albert Einstein. He has some school phobia issues, school avoidance. He's been homeschooled, whatever, but he needs to come to school now. And he was outside. It was like 30 degrees. He had no coat on, and his dad would not let him in the car. And he sat out there and screamed and yelled and screamed and yelled. And I'm like, he's got to be cold out there. And we just watched because the dad called us. He's like, do not. If he wants to come into the school, let him in, but I'm not letting him in the car. And the dad knew eventually he would have to come in, and he eventually came into the school. And he was actually really cold, and sat there and warmed up, and he was fine. But I think if the dad had given in, then it had been like, okay, I drove you to school, and I let him in. And he locked. And I guess the great thing about this child is he goes like this all the time to his parents, like, I don't know. So when he was screaming and banging on the door, Sled's like, I don't know. I thought it was great. I was like, you go, Dad, you go. So this was a school-aged kid. Yeah, they would have been different. But we had also our security officer was outside to make sure that he didn't, like, take off to the street or something. But Dad was there. I mean, so we felt okay because I figured if Dad, you know, it's his kid, so it's not us keeping him out there. But I thought, you know, Dad was out there doing whatever he did, and this is what he had to do. And I mean, he came to school, he took all his state testing, so we're making progress. But I think some of that tough love stuff had to go out there. But I thought, yeah. So what do you do when the car is leaving? Yeah, when the car is leaving. So interestingly enough, and I don't know if I have it on one of the, I have a couple of websites, like what do you do when? And I think it's answered on there. But one of the things is, you know, like when there's a prize or you have something coming up or they always remember that. Hey, you said Friday, today's the day. Shocking that they can remember. So you know they can remember. So they're choosing not to remember. So then, if that's the case, my car is leaving at 8 a.m. If it doesn't leave and they're not out there, I'm sorry you made the choice not to get in the car and you're going to be late to school today. Whatever that consequences is that you set up for that. So, you know, and then when they get home from school, and maybe there's a consequence at school. I mean, I've been, you know, my son, he went through a spell in elementary where he just wouldn't tell me, he'd forget that he had homework. I'm like, but you got this planner thing and whatever. And so I just said, you know, if you have something for recess, you know, and he loved the recess. He was out there playing football every day. I'm like, you know, do that, and then I'll have a consequence at home, too. So, you know, when he didn't do what he needed to do at home, then he had to sit in and go around. I think they had a media center that someone watched kids that couldn't go to recess. So he did that. So, again, right, my car. But, again, that's something you can control. Your car's leaving at 8 a.m. You back it out, and you start going down the driveway, see what happens. I don't know. But then I'm sorry you weren't in the car at that time. So, but yeah, the morning routine is a struggle, and there's actually, you know, things that, but again, I'm sorry you weren't ready at 8, you know, I'm sorry you made the choice not to be ready at 8. This is the consequence for that. So, okay. And here, who has said that if about the slot machine? So never set a limit you're not willing to enforce. So again, think about it. Any of you ever been to Vegas, been to a casino? Like, you know, you pull it 10 or 11 times, and then next thing you know, you won. You're like, oh. When you were just about to walk away, like somehow the machine knows when you were just about to walk away, and you're like, oh, I'm going to do this again. And so they're hoping that this is the one time mom or dad says, oh, we're not going to enforce it. And they're like, bonus. So they're hoping that they slip up and win the jackpot. So, and that, again, none of us are perfect. None of us are going to do it 100% of the time. There's just no way to do that. So, providing choices. I thought this was a meal. I don't think it is. As I looked at it later, I'm like, I think this, I don't know what he's doing there. But, example of a child throwing a tantrum during dinner. Would you rather eat dinner with us or would you rather be in the timeout area? It's really up to you. If you decide to go to timeout, please come back as soon as you can. We'd love to have you back. Again, and then if he chooses, then you ramp it up. If he chooses not to go, you can, you know, if you're able to put him in there and be like, you need to go to timeout. If you don't go to timeout, then this will happen, the if then. But the big thing with these, with the choices, is control. You want to have control, but you also want to give your child some control. Kids don't have a lot of control over their life. You're telling, oh, we got to get in the car, we got to go to gymnastic. Oh, we got to go here, we got to pick up your brother. Oh, put on your snowsuit. Oh, it's time for, you know, whatever. We're going to, you know, Aunt Kathy's. So they're going everywhere. And a lot of times, you know, they don't feel like, I never get to do what I want to do, which we all know isn't true because they do mostly what they want to do.
A mom said that she and her husband argue because when her husband comes home, the children do comply very quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, and I have to say, so just, I'm going to pick on the boys for a second. You guys have it easier than us as women. Because honestly, the second the dad walks into the room and with that voice,
yes,
everything's quiet, and it's like, really? And so then they think, we don't know what we're doing. Like, you guys aren't just, you're not tough enough. Right. You're not, and it's literally, I think it has to do with the fact they've got this big, deep voice, and they come in, and they know dads know our business. And being, you know, single moms, and I know you're not a single mom, but single moms have to play both roles. Yeah. So Strongsville, sometimes we're all women over there at Strongsville. So I keep telling them we're hiring new people. I'm like, we need a male presence at Strongsville. We just do. I mean, we have little kids. They're super cute most of the time, but some of them have some ridiculously, involved meltdowns. And I think, you know, we're all pretty tiny, and it's like, and then the security guard sometimes from Westlake will come over. And Christine, I think you've seen, I mean, he's built like a tank. He's like, I never have any problems with these kids. And I'm like, all I got to do, I'm scared of you. I am scared. I mean, all I have to do is walk up to them. They're like, I mean, he is like, yeah. And he's really good with the kids on top of that, which is wonderful. But honestly, all he has to do, like with some of our like out of control kids, is just like, and they're fine because they're all just like, whoa, I don't want him doing anything to me. So, yeah, I mean, it is just, that's, yeah. So, again, giving the choices. It's sharing control, so giving them the option. And again, it's how you speak, and it's a learned over time. But if you just keep, you know, I'm sorry you made that choice. I'm sorry. And it's over and over and over. My son, so I don't know what he did. He either swore at his sister or hit his sister. I don't know. And I'm like, that's it. You know, you're done with whatever you're doing. We're going over here now, you know. And he's like, what are my choices? What are my choices? And I thought, he was like six. I'm like, there are none. There's certain things that are just, you're done. Like, that is, you know that's not tolerated here. So it wasn't a minor thing. It was a pretty major thing. I can't remember what it was. But I still remember, what are my choices? What are my choices? Because he knew he was in bed. I'm like, none today. No choices for you today. So how do you give the choices with limits? So do you want to do your chores now or in 15 minutes? Do you want to do your homework before or after dinner? Give choices before your child gets resistance. If you give them afterwards, you reward the resistance. So you've already negotiated with them after. And for each choice, you give them no longer than 10 seconds to choose. So if you know they have their 10 seconds, well, if you don't choose in another couple of seconds, I'm just going to make the choice for you because clearly you don't care. You know, what choice you have. And these are just examples, anything that works for you. Like some kids, you know, if it's after dinner, they're never going to get their homework done, so that wouldn't be a choice. Again, it has to be a choice that you can live with and you can enforce. But if it gives them, and I tell parents a lot of times with kids who struggle with the evening routine, is getting, you know, you want to do the if-then, getting the stuff that if you know that it is not going to be good for him after dinner or her after dinner, don't give him that choice. Do you want to do it right after school or do you want to have a snack and rest first and then do your homework? So however it works, but you're giving them two choices that you can live with and you know will work and be successful for them. You choose for them. Only give choices that fit your value system. And give 99% of your choices when things are going well. This is like my son with the one thing. Like, he's like, what are my choices? I'm like, well, you've been making a lot of the choices. Now it's my turn. You know, you don't get them. So you try, and you start with little things. My son, he had, I'm sure you guys, a lot of you are like kind of sensory issues. Like, you know, he hated socks. He, you know, in the summer he was wearing shorts and t-shirts. He still to this day does not wear jeans. He's in eighth grade. He does not like the buttons. And so he'd be like, my socks are hurting me. I mean, whose socks hurt them? But I think that, you know, I didn't know anything about it, but I met plenty of kids now whose socks bug them. And so he had, you know, and he hates wearing coats. Like, he plays baseball, and the coach is like, he would be such a great catcher. He can't stand all that equipment on him, so he hates it. So he won't play catcher because he didn't like all that equipment. I don't know if it's the movement. I don't know. But so he always hated to wear coats, too, and he wanted to wear shorts well into, you know, it's 22 degrees out, and he wants to wear shorts to school. And so we had a whole system around that. Like, you get to choose. Like, I would let him choose, like, 3 days a week he could wear shorts. And then we pared it down to one, which day this week do you want to wear shorts? And pretty soon he realized it's kind of cold. I don't want to wear shorts anymore. So same thing with a coat. And, you know, one day they went outside for recess and he didn't have a coat. And I don't know what they're, and he was like, it was really cold. I think I need my coat tomorrow. And I'm like, that's a natural consequence. Because I'm like, to me, he's not going to die out there. They're not going to, and they're not going to take him outside if it's something, you know. And I'm like, all right, you go out. So those were battles I didn't pick with him because I just, right. So I would say to the child, my son, if it was my son, I would say, well, if the school doesn't let you out without a coat, then I guess you're in at recess. Sorry. Like, bring the coat next time. I mean, that's how I would say it. And sometimes the schools have those. Like, for the little kindergartners, like, we didn't go out as much as I thought we should have. I would have shipped everybody out. But so many of them were not dressed appropriately for the weather. Like, they didn't have their mittens. And I think it was the type of population that we have. Like, maybe they don't. Or they, you know, the parents are not as, you know, thinking about that kind of stuff. And so we didn't go out a lot. At least the kindergartners didn't. Because so many of them did not have the appropriate, you know, hats and gloves, which I thought. And so that was a school rule. Now, had we decided to send them out, then, you know, but for little ones, I don't know, I'm a little leery. But someone who's in third, fourth, fifth grade, those are natural consequences. They're not going to die from being outside for that short of time. It's 20 minutes. And I think that then you would say to them, sorry, you know, if you don't wear a coat, you know, the school rule is then you don't get to go outside at recess. So you can make that choice. I don't care. That's his choice. So little choices. Would you like to wear your coat or carry it? You're bringing it. So I'm going to make you bring it because I know you're going to get cold later, you thinking as the adult. But I'll let you carry it. You know, I'm not going to carry it, but you have to bring it. So are you going to clean the garage or mow the lawn this week? Which one is your chore? And will you be coming home by 8 or 8:30? You know, so giving them the choice to let them pick when they want to come home. And then whatever they pick is whatever their curfew is. So, and you would reiterate that. You've chosen 8 o'clock. I want you home at 8. They might change their mind then, but that's okay, like before they leave. But if that's the limit you're setting for them, you need to enforce that. So this is kind of like how you take it off of you and put it back on them. So instead of stop arguing with me, I'll be glad to discuss this with you as soon as the arguing stops. Quit breaking the rules of the game, like if you're playing like a Monopoly or something and they're like, you're sorry and they're cheating. Those who can follow the rules are welcome to play. You're not going out without your coat. You may go out as soon as you have your coat. So just changing just the verbiage a little bit. Again, you want to put the ownership back on the child. They're the ones making the choices. They may not know it, but it takes it off of you. You're so mean, Mom. You don't let me do this, this, and this. I'm sorry you made the choice to do A, whatever it is. So, and the other thing, so interesting enough with the tantrums in the stores, and I don't know if it was Love and Logic or not, but someone told me, they're like, if your kid like has the meltdown every time in the checkout line because you're not getting them the candy or the little game or whatever it is, they're like, go to the store and obviously you can't leave. You got a cart full of crap that you just bought and you're like, you're not coming back. You don't have time, so you got to deal with the meltdown. Have some practice runs. Go to the store when you really don't need anything. And then if they have the meltdown, be like, oh, we're out of here, and out you go out the store. Like, or if you've set your limit and said, if you behave and if you're with me and then we'll get you a toy, and if they don't or whatever, just leave the cart and go. Like, don't fill up the cart with too much stuff because then that leaves the poor Walmart or the Target or the Heinen's or whoever it is with stuff to put back. But take practice runs so you can enforce that limit when you really don't need anything. And that would be the same for anywhere you go, if you can. Again, if you have 3 kids, bundling them all up and doing a practice run, that could be a struggle. But that's something if you have a child that tests your limits when you're at the store and has the meltdown. And I don't know if you've seen the ones on YouTube where the kid's having the meltdown and the dad just drops everything and goes, and the kid just stopped, and that was the end of the meltdown because the dad started having a meltdown. That was really funny YouTube video. So I don't think I could do that, but yeah. But I thought that was pretty awesome. Yeah, that stopped the meltdown right there. So, again, owning their own pain, not blaming the adult. It takes the blame off of you because then you can just throw it right back. I'm sorry you made that choice. And the other one is less likely to seek revenge because, again, the revenge is big, you know, getting back at you, getting back at a sibling. Okay, again, short, sweet, simple, repetitive. How many times have I said, I'm sorry you made that choice? So I'm saying, I'm sorry you made that choice. So when they hear the same statement repeated over and over, my parents care and they're not going to back down, no use arguing. And there's my little favorite, I'm sorry you made that choice. That's what I say. Can you go back? Yeah. So again, right, what you were asking, it's hard to deliver empathy when your child is misbehaving. You really just want to drop kick them out the window because you're just so done with that. So that's when you kind of just need to take a deep breath. That's a tough one. It's repetitive. Short, act, don't yak. So, and again, nonverbal communication. What is it, 90? Yeah, we do so without words. I can't tell you how many times I've had people come into my counseling office, and I'm like, how is everything? And they're like, fine. And, you know, both parents, if I'm doing couples, are like, fine. And I'm like, I can tell you're not fine. Like, your words are saying fine, but everything else about you is not saying fine. So I used to run a group for kids who had ADHD and who were on the spectrum. Little boys group, I think third grade, fourth grade. So we're all around. We would get our lunch because I didn't do it during recess because I hated taking recess away from kids because they need recess, and I think they need more recess, honestly. We need to instill like a morning, a lunch, and an afternoon recess. That's my 2 cents on recess. So I would take them during lunch. We'd get in early. The lunch ladies would be ready for us. We'd get the lunch. We'd go to this group. And I had this wheel, what's underneath your anger? And so anger is a secondary emotion, and I never let anyone say that they're angry. Because you're not angry first. You're disappointed. You're jealous. You're frustrated. You're all of those things, and then it comes out as anger. So I'm passing this wheel around and explaining each of the words, and I'm letting them touch it because it has a little spinner. And I'm like, so we're going to talk about what's underneath your anger, what's beneath your anger today. And as I'm talking to the boys, and we're eating lunch, and then I look over, and this kid is peeling my wheel apart. I'm like, dude, what are you doing to my wheel? It's like, I'm seeing what's underneath. And I thought, oh, yes, I cannot use those analogies. I'm like, and he was on the spectrum. I'm like, yes, that's it, exactly. And I thought, wow, that's on me. You're absolutely right. So then I kind of had to explain it. I couldn't explain it to a fourth grader. I just couldn't, like, it was too, I was, you know, okay to be angry, or, you know, and in this case, most likely it's frustration. You know, you can't get the Lego to go directly, or your friend's not playing the game you want to play. You're frustrated with that first. Or maybe your friend doesn't want to play with you at all, so you're disappointed. And so, but it's okay to be angry, but there's good ways, I guess, for a little one, good ways and bad ways to show that you're angry. You know, a good way is to, you know, to let us know that you're angry, to take a couple of deep breaths. What are some coping skills? A bad way is to kick people and throw things. That is not a positive way to show that you're angry. So say, okay, you're angry. So I would teach him, let's talk about what we can do when we're angry. And so what are some things? And give him, and that's one of the things, like the Tough Kid book gives you like different strategies that you could, that the child can use for when they're angry. Like what are some, and you can even talk about what do you notice when you're getting angry? Like, do you notice that you start getting warm? Do you notice that you are clenching your fists or your teeth? Do you notice that your head starts to hurt? Like, what are some, like, physical cues that you're getting angry? And so then how can you diffuse them beforehand? Because literally, it seems like it's 0 to 100. And in a lot of cases, like, we have a child right now, we're trying to figure out, like, he was just mad because some kid was talking in class. We're like, that can't really be the reason that he's having this huge meltdown. And he's like, I just wanted him to shut up. And I'm like, all he said was how his weekend was. Like, really? Like, how do you stop that? I don't know, because that went from 0 to 100. There was no antecedent, like he didn't get his pen or he didn't get – it was just like I just didn't want him talking. I thought, whoa. Okay, so we're working on that. But so we're trying to figure out what – but and he came in happy as a clam. And literally the teacher was like – it was like this one kid started sharing and poof, he didn't want to hear about it anymore. And then he just escalated from there. So
a parent asked – how old should they be before you talk to them about the emotions underlying anger?
You can try and do it together. I mean, I start that at a really young age. I started with my kindergartners. Like, I'm like, you're never allowed to say you're angry. You need to think about what's making you angry. Is it because your friend hurt your feelings? Is it because you couldn't get the Lego together? Is it because you have a lunch detention today? Like, whatever it is. Like, what that means you're disappointed because you can't go outside and play recess.
Okay.
Probably maybe to the point where I need to show my little...
Yeah, you want to show your hand up?
Yeah. So this might help you guys. So if you go to Love and Logic, so I pulled these up for you guys, and I have just the loveandlogic.com at the end of my thing. They have little things, how to make mornings easier. And so there's a whole helping children learn responsibility. I don't know if you want to pick on one.
How to make mornings easier.
Yeah. So there's just a whole list of how you... go ahead and, you know, do different things, what you do. And so they have little, like, scripts for you to follow and things like that. So, yeah, Love and Logic. And then it's up there. And then, what is it? Love and Logic. Quick Parenting Tips. That's client. And then this is like birth through six. They have articles for little ones. And then they have elementary. And then, so all this is free on the internet, which is great. And so, which this is newish in the last probably 3 or 4 years. They used to make you pay for everything. And so now I think they must be making enough money doing whatever it is they're doing that they've offered some free tips to people. So I'm trying to find this Tough Kid stuff that I wanted to show you because there's some really cool stuff in here. And then this one was, now they came out with a whole book, which I didn't even know until I was Googling this stuff yesterday, Love Me Enough to Set Some Limits. So there you go. And that's Faye. He's the one that's the original author of all of this stuff, the Klein and Faye stuff. But they have, and I brought the books so you guys could look at them if you wanted to. So there's a teaching one, which I use with my schools. There's Parenting Teens. There's Love and Logic for Early Childhood, so for the little guys. And then Meeting the Challenge. These are for kids who have attention and behavior issues. And then this is just straight up Parenting with Love and Logic regular. This must be the newer version. I have a couple of different versions. I have three. So, Lord Almighty. And I, like I said, I use them all. And they checked to see if they don't have them here at the library, but they can order them for you. So if you wanted to just check them out, it's nice we're in a library, so they can do that for you. And this is, like I said, the parenting one was one that was required reading for my counseling students because they had, for marriage and family therapy, you see a lot of parenting issues in family counseling. And so that was what they all use for that. And I know that Crossroads out in Mentor, which I know is really far away from you guys, but that's the go-to mental health agency out in Lake County. And they have Parenting with Love and Logic groups. And I believe that Guidestone, who is the Guidestone, that's the old Berea Children's Home, they do some Love and Logic, I think. And then, no, it's not Guidestone. Scratch that. Child and Guidance in Summit County does some Parenting with Love and Logic groups. So there's a counseling, and then I know that Hudson City Schools at one point was a Love and Logic school. I don't know if they're still doing that, but I knew the school counselor there, and he was trained in it, and he trained that school system in it. So there's a lot of groups around where they had people get trained, and then they run the groups with this. So it's something that's out there. They have a ton of empirical evidence that validates the they've had studies. People have done different studies on it, so it is empirically validated. So to show that it does make it through their groups. And then they keep pumping out these books, so they're making money hand over fist. And if you want to get trained, I think you can go to Denver, and it's like $5,000. So yeah, let me know if you find money for that. I've never been trained. When I worked at Akron, they're like, no. I'm like, but I could turn the whole clinic into a Love and Logic clinic. They're like, no. I asked my school system, no. And where I am now, Bruce is like, absolutely not. That's not happening. So there's all of that, and then I don't know, do we have more?
Yes, questions?
Yeah.
yeah.